Welcome to Your Legal Rights. Tonight's program is on drones. All you need to know. No, that does not mean we're going to drone on, but rather we're talking about drone aircraft and the FAA. My guest tonight in the studio with me is Ron Rohde. Ron is an attorney and pilot, licensed to conduct commercial drone operations, certified under Part 107. In a moment, we'll ask him what that means. And on the telephone, we have Edward Page, a partner in the 350-attorney firm of Carlton Fields. Ed is a lawyer in their Tampa office. They also have offices here in California, in Southern California in particular. If you would like to have questions for my guests, you can call us at 866-798-8255. Or if you're local, feel free to call us at 415-841-4134. I'd like to welcome both of my guests. Perhaps, Ron, you would like to, I'd like you to start and tell us what that means. First, what is Part 107?
Part 107 is a very recently passed part of the Federal Aviation Regulations that covers drone operations or unmanned aircraft systems. UAS is what they also call it. And this is the part of the Federal Aviation Regulations that allow commercial operations by drone operators.
And when you say commercial operations, can you give us a little detail about that?
Well, commercial operations is basically any operation for money. If I intend to fly my drone for money, that could be something such as making videos to post on YouTube and then charge people for that or make money on those videos. Could also be something such as surveying a roof, a roofer surveying a roof to decide how to bid on a job, or a realtor taking videos of a property that they're marketing, or even the fire department operating a drone to track the progress of a fire and determine whether or not it's safe to send their firemen up on the roof.
Ed, welcome to the show. You're calling from out in Florida. We appreciate that. Know that it's kind of late night there. You're, I understand, a certified specialist in criminal law, as am I, by the way.
Yes, with NBTA and have been since 1988.
Excellent. Congratulations on your anniversary. This would be your 30th anniversary year.
Yes, thank you.
I also understand that you're a flight instructor, and you're obviously quite knowledgeable on unmanned aircraft systems. Do those two things ever coincide, that your background in aviation and your background in criminal law?
They do from time to time. I get what I call aviation criminal cases. Sometimes they're state, mostly they're federal, and they have to do with violations of the federal aviation regulations and how they intersect with the federal criminal laws. And so I get an occasional federal aviation criminal case, and they're normally interesting and very challenging.
And again, if you'd like any questions for either of my guests, feel free to call us at 415-841-4134 or toll free at 866-798-8255. And what I'd like to ask you both is if you could ponder a moment. I have a teenage son who's of age, and he's asking friends to pony up and give him, for his birthday, a small drone aircraft. I don't know if he's really thought through what he can and can't do with those. Could you talk to us a little bit about what someone should know when they're embarking down that road for the first time?
Well, is that what you want to know or what you think your teenage kid should know?
The answer to both those questions would be yes.
Okay. The first thing is that that drone is now required to be registered with the FAA. It's a fairly simple registration process. You have to go online to the FAA.gov, and it costs $5 to do over online. So there was a very short period where it wasn't required, where it was required, then it wasn't required. Some people may have heard about a case where the court overturned that requirement, but the statutes have been rewritten, and now it's required again. So if you hear that it's not required because of the hobby rules, that's no longer true. So that's the first thing. The second thing that your teenage son, and perhaps you, should also do is go out and get some insurance, make sure that you're covered, since I presume that your teenage kid is under 18, so you're going to be responsible for her mistakes or his mistakes. So you may want to consider insurance. But more importantly, you need to both of you need to go out and learn about the airspace and where it is and is not allowed to fly the drone. And there are areas where you can fly it, where you cannot fly it, where maybe it's not a very good idea.
And I would add as follows, that neither Ron nor I can, we could spend probably 3 hours on this topic, what issues you should look at and be concerned with. But the FAA, actually at faa.gov, www.faa.gov, has a pretty good website full of information about drone operations and what the issues are that you should be looking at. So, for example, anybody would first focus on what age do I need to be to operate a drone, and the rules specify that you need to be 16 or older. So that's what I would focus everybody on is FAA.gov. There's a search window. You input the word drone, and you'll get more and more information about operating drones.
Another source for that information, by the way, is also the Academy of Model Aeronautics website. And this is a community-based organization that has set out a number of guidelines, and the FAA strongly recommends that the hobby operators follow these, become acquainted with and follow these guidelines by these community-based organizations. Another organization is AOPA, which is the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, at I believe it's AOPA.com or I forget which, but in any case, you can look them up, and they have a lot of information and resources on operating drones safely and within the rules, as does the AMA or Academy of Model Aeronautics organization.
Karen from Berkeley, you're on your legal rights.
Yes, can you hear me?
We hear you fine. Welcome.
Hold on.
And I understand it's AOPA.org.
AOPA.org.
And while we're on this issue, you know, of people in the younger years operating drones, it's important that the parent get involved here, because the younger kids really don't understand the magnitude of what's going on here. The closer you are to an airport, the more important it is to be careful. Whether you're at a large airport with a control tower or even an airport without any operating control tower, it's very important. I pulled into my house. I live within 5 miles of Tampa International Airport. It has what's called Bravo airspace around it, which is airspace that runs from the ground up and out for a good distance, and I live within that zone, and I saw my neighbor supervising their son who was flying a drone. Now this is probably about 6 or 8 months ago, and they were clearly in violation of the drone regulations that Ron spoke about, part 107 of the FAA regulations concerning drones. But they had no really idea that they were in violation, and the parent can be responsible as well as the underage child in those circumstances.
I would like to resume and that you brought up an obvious question, but before I do, I'm going to turn it over. I understand, Karen, that you're back with us. Welcome.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
We hear you fine.
Okay, great. So my question is, right now, drones are being manufactured in New York on Roosevelt Island underneath the 59th Street Bridge in a building with a big, it's called a campus, where the Technion from Israel and Cornell Ornithological Laboratory have put all their information together as they are making they're making drones from birds, butterflies, bees, etc. Only they are weaponized drones. So they are now a bird that can just be let out into the environment, flying around unmanned, operated by who knows who, and that have poison gas, a pepper spray, and cameras.
Well, that sounds very interesting. I haven't seen any of those when I was in New York, but maybe they're there.
Maybe that speaks to the neighborhoods you visited. Thank you, Karen. Appreciate that. And let me ask you, I understand that, I began tonight with the idea of asking you just how pervasive drones are. And then I looked to learn that there were supposed to be somewhere between 2 and 2.5 million drones delivered last year alone. Just how pervasive are these?
Well, I think that's a very interesting number, because before drones, the fleet of aircraft in the U.S. was somewhere around, what was it, at about 100,000, 200,000 aircraft and maybe 600,000 or 800,000 pilots. So now we have several million, at least a couple orders of magnitude more unmanned aircraft systems, drones, that are being flown by several orders of magnitude more pilots out there. And so that is an important number. And I think the genie, as Ed was saying earlier, the genie is out of the bottle now.
I think drones are very pervasive. I read an article today that 35 states and the union use drones to save time and money. This was an article in General Aviation News that I read today, and it reported that 20 of the State Department of Transportations across the nation are operating drones on a daily basis, using them to gather photos and videos of highway construction projects, bridge inspections, emergency response, pavement inspections, research, traffic control, bridge inspections, and on and on. That's just our DOTs. They're using them for in fire rescue. They're just very, very pervasive. We have a local company in the Tampa area called Fly Motion that's generating revenue already, and they do all sorts of things with drones besides training, bridge inspections, and the like. So it's really going gangbusters, so to speak, with drones and all sorts of things. Ron already mentioned them in real estate, appraisals and photographs, and they're all over. And as I think I may have mentioned, I read today that even Taiwan has now adopted or is in the process of adopting regulations regarding the drone usage. So it's just not limited to the United States. It's really across the globe.
And again, if you have questions for our guest, our number is 415-841-4134 or toll-free 866-798-8255. Ed, a few minutes ago you were talking about being in fairly close proximity to Tampa Airport and that limited the operations from the ground up. And that made me curious. We had somebody demonstrating a drone right here in the studio not more than 30 minutes ago. If we were in that close proximity to an international airport, we're not that far outside of it, but if we were within the 5-mile zone, that same operation that was perfectly fine inside the building might not have been outside, even though we're talking about 5 feet off the ground?
Correct. Yeah, drone operations within what's called Class Bravo airspace that I was describing around Tampa International Airport, as well as other major metropolitan airports like SFO, San Francisco, have a... The best way to visualize it is a piece of wedding cake that sits over the airport down to ground level and normally goes up 10,000 feet and out 5 miles radius from the center of the airport. And no drone operation is permitted there unless you get a waiver. And I think Ron can speak to that because he's familiar with getting waivers to operate within, you know, certain proximity to Class Bravo airports or other towered airports.
Yeah, there's actually a couple of issues here. And by the way, Jeff, we are inside of Class Bravo here. It's even though we're more than 5 miles away, we're still inside. We're still inside their Class Bravo airspace, which goes down to the ground here. So people operating drones around here outside of a building, and by the way, you can operate your drone anywhere you want inside of a building, but outside of a building, that would have been an illegal operation. As far as obtaining a waiver, to back up one step, for a hobbyist who's operating near an airport which is not Class Bravo, they can notify the airport and operate within 5 miles of the airport if the airport doesn't object. As it turns out, for somebody who is a commercial operator, though, they must obtain a waiver from the airport if they're within the airport's controlled airspace, which is becomes rather esoteric, but it's airspace that the airport has control over. And so that's a rather involved process.
And with that, I'll turn to Rob from Chicago. You're on your legal rights.
Hey, how's it going? I just had a quick question. As an airline pilot, we've had issues in the past when the laser pointers came out. People were shooting those lasers in the cockpit and causing disarray. I was wondering if there's been issues with the drones and what the prosecution or the criminal repercussions would be for flying those drones, as you're talking about Class Bravo airspace, into the major airports with aircraft on departure or arrival into the airports?
Well, there could be, because Florida, for example, and many states has a statute that says that criminalizes the careless or reckless operation of any aircraft. And it's sometimes used and could be used because the NTSB ruled a couple of years ago that a drone is an aircraft within the federal aviation regulations, and so state and federal statutes are out there that would criminalize any endangerment of, for example, commercial aircraft or general aviation aircraft by a drone by coming too close to it or operating within controlled airspace and the like.
And what are the type of penalties someone might face? You don't realize you're so close to the controlled airspace of a major airport. Here, for example, we're very close to San Francisco International Airport. So you step outside with your drone. You're just outside your own building. You're 5 feet above the ground. But, of course, if the regulations go from the ground up, we're technically would be in violation. What kind of penalties can one face?
I'm not sure what the statute is in California, but for Florida, for example, the statute that I'm talking about under Florida statute, I think it's 860, maybe .13, the penalty makes it a third-degree felony, which is punishable by up to 5 years. The first-time offender is likely to get probation and required to, you know, educate themselves and not do it again. But the real problem that we're scratching at here in your question is that most people have no idea they can't step out and operate a drone outside their house, whether you're in Class Bravo or some other type of airspace, because they simply don't know about Bravo airspace like pilots do, and that it runs from the surface up to 10,000 feet close to big airports. And so there's a disconnect, you see, between the hobbyist and the people who treat drones like a toy, and the problems that can quickly arise if they get in the way of aircraft or that are approaching, you know, or taking off from big airports.
Yeah, I think, and that's a very good distinction between people who are just treating them as a toy and then hobbyists and pilots. The hobbyists, for the most part, especially if they're associated with some of these organizations, have educated themselves on where it is and is not safe and where it is and is not legal. The real problem is that when you have a parent and a kid who have a new toy that haven't educated themselves through one of these organizations, they're in danger of running into these problems. And by the way, Rob, I've been painted by lasers also flying over Mountain View here, and I know it's really annoying. So I haven't, though, seen any drones up at altitude or around airports where I've been landing, but I suspect it could happen.
To give a little more meaning, we did get a question from a listener who called in and sent it to us, asking, how is a drone aircraft different from a model airplane with remote control, or for that matter, a toy helicopter?
To the FAA, there is no difference. They're all aircraft. And now, as a practical matter, they operate differently. The controls work differently, but that's how you fly them, and that's how you would use them. But for purposes of regulation and airspace and rules of the road, rules of the air, they are all aircraft.
And again, if you have questions for my guest, please feel free to call in the studio at 415-841-4134 or toll free at 866-798-8255. In talking earlier, we talked about commercial use and some other uses of drones. Can you give some examples of some interesting uses of drones? I mean, we've all seen video of Amazon experimenting with making package deliveries with using drone aircraft. Can you give us some other examples? Maybe good ones, maybe bad ones.
Ed?
Ron, do you want to start with the good ones, and I'll pick out some bad ones?
Why don't you alternate?
All right. A good one is search and rescue. When it comes to search and rescue, one of the biggest problems, certainly for the Civil Air Patrol or rescuers, is that they're putting their pilots, their personnel in danger going out to look for somebody who's lost. Or if you're trying to find somebody who's fallen down a cliff and survey the scene to see what it's going to take to get somebody out, it's very difficult to get your eyes on the person when they're halfway down a cliff and stuck on a ledge. A drone removes all of that danger for the personnel and makes it much safer to search for somebody and find them without risking people's lives, and it makes it easier to get eyes on a scene where something's going on so that you can affect a rescue.
Now, Ron's played good cop. Before we switch to Ed to play bad cop with a bad use, let's turn to Randy in Redwood City. You're on Your Legal Rights.
Hey, guys. Quick question about drones and restricted airspace. I'm curious why makers or manufacturers wouldn't put in, you know, GPS technology that would alert the user as they're in the space or in the restricted space. Well, take the answer offline.
The answer is, I'm sorry, Ed.
Go ahead, but yeah. Most of the, a lot of the drones that are sold are just not that sophisticated, you know, to indicate to the owner-operator where it is. Ron, did you have a...
Yes, some of the more sophisticated drones do have exactly that capability in it. For example, I have a DJI drone that when I start up says, oh, by the way, you're inside Class Echo airspace, do you really want to proceed? So it warns me. Or it'll tell me if I'm inside of Class Bravo airspace. Even though I might be inside of a structure, it'll say, are you sure you want to proceed? So they do have that capability programmed into them. And There is some discussion of putting some limits on the operations of drones, so that will disable the operations of drones when they are in airspace that is prohibited.
But let's follow up with this. Let's say your wallet's big and you can afford a $1,000 drone versus the less expensive ones. If you're not a pilot, you don't know the difference between A, B, C, D, E, and G airspace. And even if the drone is a sophisticated one and it tells you, hey, you're in Echo or Golf airspace or Bravo, you might just say, oh, that's fine, thanks for telling me that, and fly it anyway, contrary to the rules and regulations, because you're not a pilot. I think what this goes back to is the fundamental concept here that we're really, you're flying an airplane, and that's what a drone operator is doing, and you have really huge responsibilities, both for the safety of others and yourself, before you fly it, and that kind of goes at odds with our mentality that many drones are viewed as toys. So there's always going to be a tension between let me buy that toy and fly it versus a more sophisticated drone operation.
There's kind of an analogy here with cars, and that is cars are ubiquitous. There are millions of cars out there, but we don't hand them to kids under 16, and we require that people who get into cars and who have the keys to the cars have a certain understanding of the rules of the road and where it's safe to drive a car and where it's not safe to drive a car. But they're so ubiquitous that we don't even think about all of the training that goes into somebody operating a vehicle, if only just sitting next to their parents for the first 16 years of their life. All that goes into their understanding of where they're allowed to drive a car and where they're not allowed to drive a car. This is missing from drones because they haven't been out there long enough and they haven't been operated long enough to give the general population an understanding of where they are and are not safe. You and I, Ed, as pilots, we have a sort of a intuitive feel for where it is safe and it is not safe to fly a drone or an aircraft for that matter. But somebody who just gets one, as you say, they really don't understand that there are places where it's very dangerous to be operating these things. There are places where it's very safe to be operating them, out in the middle of nowhere or on somebody's farm that's miles from the nearest airport or airway. It's perfectly fine to go out and play with it as a toy, the same as you would maybe your father's tractor out in the middle of a field. But then your father's not going to let you take that tractor out and just drive it through the field willy-nilly.
Well, that does beg a question, and we've got about a minute. But what would be the manufacturer's liability, and would that liability grow or get smaller if they do give you some warning that you're in a certain airspace?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know what liability the manufacturers have. I'm sure that the manufacturers are addressing this and are concerned about this. This is probably one reason why DJI instruments their drones and provides lots of warnings and requires the operator to override and affirmatively accept responsibility for operating that drone in a place where DJI suggests it's not safe.
So my guess, though, is I think I have an answer, and that is, look, it's unsettled about manufacturers' liability in all these situations. We're going to have test cases out there to set the parameters for it. But until it's set through some cases or statutes, a good plaintiff's firm is going to sue the operator and the manufacturer of the drone and the person who trained him and anybody else that's a potential defendant. And so it goes back to Ron's point about being sure that you have good insurance, because it may just be minimal insurance, but you would always with it probably get the right to have the insurance company defend you and provide a lawyer to you if you had a problem or an accident.
For right now, we'll leave it there. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW Radio. We're talking about drones and the FAA. and we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco. Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. Once again, 415-989-1616 or sfbar.org.
Again, you're listening to Your Legal Rights. If you have questions for my guests, please call locally 415-841-4134 or toll-free 866-798-8255. Where we left off, we were talking about insurer's liability, and Ed, you did bring up, or was it Ron that brought up, the duty to defend and how they would defend you, separate and apart from the limits of the liability. And since we've heard an example of a good use of drones and some of the more positive things we'll see, Ed, why don't you tell us a story of bad use of drones?
Well, sure, I'd be happy to. And one I just read of today that was new to me was a inmate in South Carolina last July in 2017 who used a cell phone that had been smuggled into prison to arrange for a drone to drop off wire cutters that the inmate actually used to escape from a correctional institution in South Carolina. So that's one bad use. Other bad uses are, for example, I'm familiar with a recreational user of a drone during the wildfires last summer. I forget which state, whether it was California or maybe Colorado, who was looking at burning ranch or land in a particular area, and helicopters that were trying to control the fire and put it out weren't able to do that because they spotted a drone in the area. And then my third and final example would be the one that made headlines years ago when drones were in their infancy, when a couple of people used a drone to smuggle heroin from Tijuana across the border into Southern California.
You brought up two very interesting examples, and I'm going to give you each a chance to talk about this. But both of those show uses that could be both incredibly positive and incredibly negative. The one example from the use of the fire, we clearly had somebody in the example that Ed just described who misused a drone and took advantage of the fire by flying the drones around for their own entertainment, perhaps interfering. But I could also see where perhaps at some point in time, the drone use would make it much easier to have pinpoint airstrikes to deliver water to the scene, maybe even replace the manned aircraft. And the other example you gave was importing heroin and delivering it across the border. Seems to me that we could have both good and bad uses that would employ those same things. Is that what you're finding across the board? Is that there's not much difference between a positive operation and a negative, but...
Well, am I connected here?
You are.
Oh, okay. So I think heroin's been imported or been transported just by just about every vehicle there is out there, and including submarines and aircraft and cars and donkeys. And so just saying that drone use is bad because it's been used for a negative purpose doesn't make the actual drone a bad thing. It's just the use. So, what was your question again?
I thought it was interesting to juxtapose where some of the same skills, the same efforts, could be both very positive and very negative, whether it's in delivering something good versus contraband or using it to get closer access to a fire, whether it's interfering or whether it's actually helping.
I think that's just the nature of any vehicle. The same skills used for driving an ambulance or can be used for transporting heroin across the border in a car. So that's not the issue. The issue is what is a person planning to do with their vehicle? And that's not really restricted to drone use. It's just a new kid on the block that can be used negatively.
So the ironic nature of the heroin story is that Amazon has been trying to license and develop this technology to deliver packages. You know, we're all almost addicted nowadays to ordering packages or products, and Amazon delivers it. Sometimes they get there the same afternoon as you order it. And I read a long time ago that Amazon had moved this experiment to another country in order to, you know, finalize and develop it. But other countries have experimented with this, and so it's probably not far away before we have packages delivered by drones. And then will be the issue that you're spotting and asking about, and whether what's in that package. Is it heroin? Is it a drug? Or is it makeup? Or is it something that you've ordered? So the potential for abuses are really widespread, but the potential to make timely deliveries and accomplish a lot of other good things are also present.
I think probably another... your example of using drones in firefighting is perhaps more instructive. If the fire department is using drones in firefighting or forest fire or fighting forest fires, then the drones are being integrated into a system in a very careful way. The Forest Service has practiced with those drones. They have worked out a method to keep them out of the way of the planes that are going to bomb the fires with fire retardant. And there's going to be a very well-coordinated effort to integrate those drones into the system, as opposed to somebody who simply decides to fly the drone around without any kind of communication or coordination with the fire department, just for their own entertainment. But the same goes, again, for anybody can get in the way of a fire department in the course of their duties or rescue operations. It doesn't take a drone to do this.
Again, you're listening to Your Legal Rights. Our guests tonight on the phone are Edward Page, a certified criminal law advocate by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, a flight instructor, also a great source of understanding the law as it affects drone operation and the criminal ramifications of the misuse of drones, even if it was innocent misuse of drones. And in the studio with me is Ron Rohde. Ron is an attorney, a pilot. He's a licensed commercial drone operator, certified under Part 107. Ron also practices aviation law. He has been a very good friend of Your Legal Rights for many, many years, and the Call a Lawyer program. If you have questions for either of the guests or both, again, our number is 415-841-4134 or toll free 866-798-8255. We were talking about some of the good uses of drones and some of the bad uses of drones. Who would like to give me another example?
Well, another good use of drones is for commercial purposes, and I think more importantly is that there are a lot of people out there who are using drones now for commercial purposes that don't realize that that could get them into trouble. They might even be using them carefully and responsibly, but if they are not licensed by the FAA to use a drone for commercial purposes, then they can get into trouble for that.
How do you distinguish between a commercial use and a non-commercial use? Are there guidelines that people could follow?
A commercial use begins with anything that you would do with the intent of earning some money for operating the drone. And that includes using a drone in the course of business. Even though you might be not be paid for using the drone, if you're using the drone to generate revenue, for example, the real estate agent who's taking video of a place that they're going to sell, that becomes a commercial use. And it comes down to what is your intent for using the drone. So we have a lot of people out there who are flying under the radar, as it were, using drones, probably responsibly, but don't realize that they need to qualify under Part 107 for using those drones. And that's a process that they should probably look into and find out how to do. And anybody can do this. You don't have to be a licensed pilot in order to obtain a drone pilot's license. So they can find out how to do this by going online to the FAA.org. And there are also some organizations around that will train people who are not pilots how to use and how to obtain the Part 107 certification.
So, if I understand you correctly, if I'm taking some aerial photographs, perhaps I like the scenery in a given area, and I'm doing it for my own use in my own living room, it's personal use. But if I do it with the idea maybe some of the pictures will be worth selling, perhaps I've crossed over into commercial use?
That's correct. And by the way, if you're just taking pictures for the fun of it and at some time later you happen to look at those pictures or somebody offers you some money for them or you say, gee, this is a good photo, I can sell it, that's not a commercial use. Though the FAA might question you about it, I think you would have a good argument that's not a commercial use. It's the intent at the time you're using the drone.
The intent upon entry, if so to speak.
Yeah.
Does a drone typically arrive packaged with full instructions and guidance enabling the operator to comply with regulations?
The answer is not all drones do. In fact, a lot of drones don't. Though I think most of them now recommend that the owner look at the website, the FAA website, and download an app for called Before You Fly for helping them to operate the drone in a legal manner. So, but I don't think, I think providing all that training with a drone is beyond the scope of what a manufacturer can even do.
We spoke a bit earlier about what if my teenage son wanted a drone, what I should know, what he should know, where we could go for that information. The other side of that is, what if the next door neighbor wants to get a drone and I don't particularly like the idea of them flying a drone around my house? Where can I get information? Who should I talk to? Probably my neighbor, but besides that.
Yeah, same place, FAA.gov, or as Ron just said, the app called Before You Fly. Those are great information places, but you're pointing up another potential use of drones that can go from legal to improper quickly, and that is there have been several cases where drone operators have used it to spy on their neighbor or get close to their windows or engage in voyeurism and the like. And there have been cases reported in the media about that since drones became popular a few years ago.
I think you would your actual defense against something like that is the same as if they were climbing up a ladder and looking in your windows or trespassing in your backyard. The local authorities do have jurisdiction over voyeurism and nuisance. So you would go to the local police and say, this guy is a peeping Tom. They're just using a drone to do it.
And unfortunately, because drones are still new to the criminal justice system, the local police are likely to say, when you call to report that, that's an FAA problem, call the FAA. And when you finally get through and talk to an FAA safety inspector in your town or nearby, they're likely to say, that's a local problem, call your police department.
And they're both kind of right. What you should not do, though, is take a shotgun and shoot it out of the sky, because then you are shooting down an aircraft, and the FAA will say, that's really our problem, and you just broke the law, and you're in big trouble.
And in California, a reckless discharge of a firearm in and of itself could be a serious felony, so I wouldn't recommend it. Perhaps a butterfly net might be a better use. We've talked about drones being largely governed by state law, and that begs the question about what federal law might govern drones and how that might limit what the states can allow. For example, marijuana is legal for an individual to possess, I should say an adult to possess, under California law. This is new. This is a new frontier here. What if a local dispensary in California wanted to do its deliveries by way of a drone delivery service? Is that something that could comport with California law or with federal law, or is that in and of itself problematic?
I think what you have is a conflict of law issue that is really great for law students in law school, but as Ed said earlier, I think there's going to be some case law on this, and we'll find out. But it's the same problem that you would have transporting marijuana in your car today if the federal government were to pull you over for any reason. Would it be a crime? And if the highway patrol pulls you over, is it a crime? So it's an interesting question, but I don't think it's unique to drones.
But I do think that there's a problem, and that is that there are federal laws that govern the use of aircraft and the transportation of marijuana, because marijuana, you see, is still a Schedule I drug in the federal drug laws. And as a Schedule I drug, I'm not sure that you can use an aircraft. We would look at that as in the traditional sense, like a jet, a light jet, or a substantial propeller airplane to carry drugs around. But it could get the interest of federal authorities if you started to use a drone, which is now clearly an aircraft, to make deliveries of even personal use amounts of marijuana. I'd want to be real careful about that before I did that as a, even in a state like California, which has now, as I understand it, made possession of certain amounts, you know, legal.
So a listener has brought in a question. And again, if you are a listener and would like to join us, we have a bit of time left on the show. Our phone number is 415-841-4134 or toll-free 866-798-8255. And again, we're discussing drone aircraft and the FAA and local law enforcement as well. And one of our listeners has called in a question, aren't there emerging contests for drone operators in screened-off sections of an auditorium or stadium? Are there that type of contest going on indoors where you're safe? And
Absolutely. There's a lot of drone races and drone fights and so on. These are conducted in a screened area or indoors, and a lot of them are conducted indoors. The FAA does not regulate the use of drones indoors. So I'm not sure if that's being asked in terms of being a problem, or it's a great sport, and it's a growing sport.
It sounds like you mentioned a few different sports. One of them you mentioned are battles. Do they have organized battles between drones the same way they do in land-based robots?
Oh, absolutely. I've seen them. They're crashing drones into each other and trying to destroy each is trying to destroy the other drone. And it's really fun to watch. In fact, there's a Maker Fair coming up in May, and they will be doing that there again. So that's where I saw it last year. And it will be going on again at the Maker Fair in San Mateo County.
That's at the San Mateo County Event Center?
Yes.
For those that like to see it, that might be interesting to watch. I know the Event Center has a website. I'm not sure what it is, but I'm sure you can look at that and see when that's coming up, the Makers Fair. Ed, what do you know about drone contests in your neck of the woods? Do they have a similar activities there, screened in areas of an auditorium or stadium?
I know that that's legal, but I haven't read or seen of any of that kind of activity yet here in the Tampa Bay area of Florida where I live. But it's just a matter of time for it to come because drones are so popular and easy to get, and it's something different.
There's also other activities with drones that are organized. Are there any racing or things of that nature? Any of those type of contests?
Oh, yes. You'll see the drone racing also. Usually these are first-person view drone racing. Again, they'll have that at the next Maker Fair where they'll have... And there are people who are making a living now doing drone racing. In fact, there was
In fact, I may have mentioned that there's a drone racing league, DRL, and that Cox Communications announced a national sponsorship agreement, I think, just recently. So Ron's right that drone racing leagues are the wave of the future, and they exist.
And we mentioned the Makers Fair that comes around to the San Mateo County Event Center. I am told that the website for the San Mateo County Event Center is smcec.co. smcec.co. Ed from Menlo Park, welcome. You're on your legal rights.
Yes, thank you, gentlemen. Good evening. I listen to quite a few technology programs, and on one of them, they mentioned some manufacturer selling a system that if you're being disturbed by a drone, perhaps as you were suggesting, someone being a peeping Tom, you can somehow turn this thing on. I don't know if you aim it at it, but it emits some sort of a radio wave that causes the drone to come down. In other words, now, if that were to happen, how would you determine who the owner of that drone would be, and do you have the legal right to force it down in that manner if it's behaving in that manner? In other words, it's violating your privacy.
One way you can determine, if the drone is brought down to the ground, the drone is supposed to be registered, and it's supposed to have that registration number on the drone. Doesn't mean somebody's done it, but then people drive around without license plates sometimes too. As far as interfering with aircraft and forcing an aircraft to the ground, I think you're in kind of dangerous territory there. Certainly law enforcement officials are experimenting with various ways to bring down drones. But the idea of violating FCC regulations by sending out interfering radio waves and forcing an aircraft to the ground might get the attention of the FAA. I think you ought to consider that very carefully. Even if it is trespassing, there are some other issues there, too.
Edward Page, I'd like you to weigh in on that as well. Do you find that this might fall into a type of self-help that you would advise against as a criminal law specialist?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting area. It's dicey, but I think the point to make here is that there is the technology that will do that, you see, because in presidential security with the Secret Service, other big events, Super Bowl and stadiums and the like, there's the constant threat of drones. And that technology has been developed to disable the drone and bring it to the ground. Whether you do that because your neighbor you think might be spying on you or being a peeping Tom and the like, I think my first call would be to the local police and FAA before I did any what's called self-help.
So we're not talking about a tractor beam. We're talking about interfering with the radio communication between the controls and the drone itself.
Correct, which forces the drone to the ground and, you know, and stops what, you know, what the problem is.
And for those who have been following our discussion of the Maker Faire, I am told that the Maker Faire is coming up on May 18th through 20th of this year. Information for the Maker Faire is available at makerfaire.com/bay-area. Again, the site for that is makerfaire.com/bay-area for info on the Makers Faire. Any other stories you want to tell us about good use, bad use, before we wind down? We have just a couple minutes left.
I think there are dozens of good uses that can be made of drones. You know, you're going to see it for controlling wildfires, doing bridge inspections, more thorough, you know, bridge inspections, speed control, crop maintenance and control. Well, where the crop is doing poorly, they add more fertilizer after a drone inspects it and reports that. It's instantaneous feedback. So I think that the drones are the wave of the future, and I think the good uses outweigh the bad. We're going to have, as Ron said earlier, always somebody who's going to make a bad use of a drone, but the good uses are just really out there. And we're going to be surprised probably in just 2 or 3 years by what else drones have accomplished for us. They save a lot of money and time, and I think it's the wave of the future.
And Ron, anything you'd like to say in summing up?
Certainly. I think drones are here to stay. As Ed just said, there's a lot of great uses for them, a lot of valuable uses for drones. But also, I think we ought to take a look at who's in this technology. Turns out some of the best drones out there right now are made in China. The DJI that I've mentioned that I own is a Chinese product, and they are way out ahead of us in drone technology. And I would hate to see the FAA and the government slow drone development and drone technology down while the other countries such as China make great strides in advancing the technology, and we'll end up playing catch up. So the other thing is just to readdress something Ed said about the local police and the federal government pointing fingers saying that it's that guy's problem. The federal government has put out a white paper on what local law enforcement can and cannot and should and should not do. And voyeurism is one of those things that they're allowed to enforce.
Thank you, and that'll be the last word tonight. I'd like to thank our guests, Ron Rohde, attorney, pilot. He has offices in Palo Alto, and in addition to doing aviation law, has been a longtime supporter of the program and works with intellectual property, amongst others. And Edward Page, partner in the firm of Carlton Fields in Tampa, certified criminal law advocate by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. This is Your Legal Rights. This is and I am Jeff Hayden. Thank you.
Support for Your Legal Rights for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. And if you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. This is 91.7 KLW San Francisco.